This episode of Ameripod was recorded August 24th, 2017 at 6:15 p.m.
Anything about history, about how people get along with each other once wars finish and peace is restored. If you kill somebody's father, he's going to be pissed and come after you.
Yeah.
Like, that's human nature, right?
And so are all of his sons and the uncle and the cousins. Like, you can't, it's whack-a-mole, and when you kill one, you add five.
Sounds familiar. What up, world? Welcome to another episode of the Ameripodcast, episode 30.
Woo!
Don't stare into the sun.
We made it to 30, guys.
We did make it to 30. Our podcast has wisdom now.
Yeah.
We're starting to have wisdom.
Is that how it's 30?
I was told by Fran Furlong that it's actually 50 when you really can just say that you are wise. But 30, I feel like you can start like getting in there.
I don't know. I know some 50-year-olds that I would not want to proclaim as wise.
Yeah, I trust Fran though. That's a good shout out, John.
Right, thank you.
So we're more than halfway to wisdom.
Right. Yep.
My name is Blake Mannion, and sitting next to me today is John Kelly. How are you?
Doing well. Hello, everyone.
And in Evergreen, Colorado, Mr. John Anderson. How are you?
Hey, everybody.
Tyler Mayo is not here with us today. He is, I'm not sure what this meant, but he is taking vodka.
He's doing field research.
Field research, I like that.
Yep. Titled vodka.
Field research.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the Phoenix rally a little bit, Trump's Phoenix rally, and we were going to talk about Afghanistan, Trump's speech on Afghanistan, fill you guys in on that, sprinkled in with, peppered with Nazis, really.
Boo Nazis.
So does anybody want to explain why it's not safe to stare into the sun?
Like the science? I actually don't know, other than like it'll fry your brain, or by brain I mean eyes.
Staring directly into the sun is just horrible for your eyeballs. It fries your retina.
Yeah,
it
burns your retina,
which is why there were so many nice reminders all over the place that you shouldn't stare into the sun during the eclipse.
And Trump still did it.
Yep. And Trump still
because
did
he
it.
Defies the laws of everything,
right?
He does. I hope his eyes hurt the next day.
I'm sure they did.
Maybe that's why he was so grumpy at the rally.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
I want to make a honey badger reference, but I feel like the honey badger's so much cooler than Trump. You guys know the honey badger?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, Trump's Phoenix rally was basically, I felt like, just his way of trying to make himself feel better. Like, it was a total ego boost. I thought he was going to maybe talk about Charlottesville or something. I don't know why I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I thought it was actually going to be a place for him.
He did kind of talk about Charlottesville.
He talked a lot about the media's reaction to his reaction of Charlottesville. He spent like 20 minutes being a media pundit. I mean, he went up there with quotes of his that he then did like a 20-minute Rachel Maddow expose on like the media reaction to his reaction, but he left out the most important quote, which was the on many sides quote. He read all of his statements besides that one,
I think he clearly did that on purpose.
Of course he did. Yeah. And he just did that in this epic screed against the lying media and how it's all their fault, which is just violates the rules of leadership so horribly that I cannot believe this man was elected. It completely blows my mind. Blaming anybody is not what you're supposed to do as a leader, especially like the media. You're not supposed to punch down.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the little man complex, right? He obviously needed this rally to stroke his ego a little bit. And it's still so strange to me. It's his first year in office. He's still 3 years away from re-election, and he's basically running his re-election campaign already. He's not getting anything done. He's clearly calling these things campaign rallies.
No, it's not. It is literally the Donald Trump for President 2020 campaign that rented this. It is literally a campaign rally. There is no, like, figurative about it. It is bananas. And that's why everybody was like, well, Obama, like, did speeches and you liberals didn't freak out. Some Twitter troll posted that on one of my comments. But obviously, it wasn't the Barack Obama for president campaign in the first year. He was out trying to do policy, not politics. And this wasn't even politics. You're right, Kelly. This was like his safety blanket. Like, it's bananas how insecure this man is.
Yeah. Yeah, I really feel like at least, what, 3/4 of that rally was just him trying to defend himself from him trying to dig himself out of the hole that he landed in after Charlottesville.
I mean, I think
there was nothing productive to come out of it.
He, like, rambled on about some policy afterwards, after his screed against the media that I kind of like zoned out on. And he also said some like,
was it the stuff about the wall, John? Was that the policy stuff you zoned out on?
That was part of it. Yeah. When he said, what was the quote, Kelly?
I think it was, even if we have to shut down the government, we will build the wall. Something along those lines.
He will, I guarantee you, fold on that. I promise you he's going to fold. Like, he's folded on all of his other threats that he's done. Like, I wish that somebody during the primary would have actually been able to stand up to him instead of all of those little pathetic people that they had up there. Because he really just, he's a bully that needs to get popped in the nose, and then he starts crying and complaining and falls back to his mom. Like, it's amazing.
Well, isn't it? It's not Trump that can shut the government down, right? Like, it's up to Congress.
It's both. Right? He could veto the spending bill, and then Congress could override it, which would be hilarious. But so they would need still what,
override it even if he doesn't want to participate.
Yeah, it's a bill. Right, so it gets passed, and then what is it? 3/4?
I guess that's my point. Like, they don't really need him, right?
I mean, you would have to have the Democrats and Republicans in an unprecedented unified budget that hasn't happened. I don't know when the last time.
Definitely not this century. But
yeah, I don't know. I mean, the closest analogy I can think of is when, like, the Democrat – or when Bill Clinton reached a budget deal with Newt Gingrich in, like, 96 or something.
Right, but then he signed it.
Right, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, that's the closest I can think to. Yeah. Like, it's not like it got overridden. That would be an unprecedented rebuke of the president if they had enough votes. And – unprecedented unified legislation in this current climate.
Well, I want to say the last time that something like that happened, where it was so unified on both sides. I mean, not overriding the president, but so unified on spending on both sides, was probably like World War II.
Well, like, this is
probably, yeah,
both sides were able to be like, yes, of course, we can agree exactly what A, B, and C should be spending.
This is a first in many ways. This year and this president.
Absolutely.
So, we might all be super surprised.
I mean, if they can get unified on a budget, they can probably get unified on censure. And if they can get unified on censure, they can probably start getting unified on impeachment proceedings. So, like, these things will happen pretty fast. Right. And it's interesting that he's in this war with McConnell. An ex, I believe, chief of staff of McConnell's came out the other day and said feuding with McConnell is one of the fastest ways Trump could get impeached.
Sure.
So I think what he meant by that was they're going to lose the Senate, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that. It could also be that, you know, McConnell is definitely very powerful in the Senate and has got a lot of allies. He's also towards the end of his political career, you know. Maybe 10 years left, maybe another two Senate runs, maybe. You could see a guy like that just being like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to walk away anyway. You know, I'm going to shake it up and then walk away.
Burn it down. I think that there is some unification. Well, I will be interested to see what McCain's actions did during the recent Obamacare attempt to repeal, and if that has any reverberating effects. But I really think it will only happen when Republican Congress people start to get pressured by activists on the right and they start to get worried about losing primaries. That's when they will start going after Trump, is when they think they'll lose. And they don't
think that yet. You mean the same Mr. McCain who didn't want to vote for better health care?
Wait, what do you mean?
That was from the Trump rally.
Oh, yeah. He was... Didn't he not even mention his name? He was like, I don't know about your senators. He was so dickish.
No, I think he did mention McCain by name.
Okay. By the way, he didn't but say, like... Under
the bus.
Yeah, and he wasn't like, I hope that Senator McCain, who's suffering from a brain tumor, gets better right now.
Oh, yeah.
And some guy at the rally screamed out he needs to die. And this Republican president rally and a Republican senator who was the candidate in 2008. It's just, it's remarkable.
That is remarkable. Yeah, there's very little humanity. And I feel like Trump and the people who are his diehard supporters.
Oh, I mean, there's humanity in their minds for the people that are close to them. As long as you're white. And I mean like white. No, sure.
Yeah, but I think that's a good way of describing, actually. Like, I feel a little human-like.
Well, what about the black guy that was standing back behind him?
He's a crazy conspiracy theorist. There's, like, some stuff that came out about him.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, it was. Not to interrupt you, but I see what you're saying. Like, within them and their world, they have humanity.
Exactly.
But
they have the moral, they think they have the moral high ground,
right,
in every argument that they have.
But I think like in the like abstract definition of the term, I like the description that Trump and the people at that rally lacked humanity. Like the Muslim ban lacks humanity, the wall lacks humanity, like
Obamacare repeal.
Yeah, I mean, I know that from their perspective, they think they're doing right by their people. But I think abstractly, like, I like that description, Blake.
Yeah, and I think the majority of people in the United States would agree that that lacks humanity, too.
Mm-hmm. I agree, yeah.
That's Trump's main base is a fringe of the right.
I think it's about...
Even moderate Republicans don't think that it's a very humane thing to do.
It's a shoelace.
My understanding is it's about 25% of the American population that is, like, diehard Republican Trump fans.
Really? That many?
It's about that many. Yeah, that was the most recent, like, polling. I think ABC, their, like, main political pollster guy, splits the American population into four groups. It's like diehard Trump curious. Like I kind of want him to succeed, but we'll see. And then the resistance. And I think the diehards are 25%. The resistance is 40%. And the other two are split with the remaining.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting grouping too.
Yeah.
That way, with three groups that are either somewhat in support or fully support, yes, and then then everybody else is grouped in the fourth.
Yeah,
everybody against them.
Right. Which tells you something interesting, that like the Democrats are unified in their opposition against him.
Across the board.
That's what that group is, right?
I don't think there's centrist Democrats who consider themselves Democrats that support Donald Trump. They might consider themselves independents and have been Democrats in the past. Yeah, I think you're right, John.
Well, if we were to chart this out on like a month-to-month graph of who, or of, I should say, like just how many Republicans do support Trump and are less likely to vote for like impeachment, if we were to like graph that out, would you guys say that it's about the same, or is it getting... like, is the chart changing more towards impeachment or less towards impeachment?
Are we talking Republican voters or Republican elected officials?
Elected officials. Yeah, because that's, I think that's two different stories also.
Elected officials, no. I mean, no. It's going to happen fast. It will be cascading, I think, when it does. And it will be, there will be some data out there that suggests that they are going to lose if they don't run away from Trump. And right, so what right, that would right, mean yeah. is their base turning on them or turning on Trump, which it doesn't look like it's going to do. So,
I agree with John. And the only other thing, there has to be some kind of catalyst to turn it, to get those votes for impeachment. And if it's not a foreseeable loss in primaries in the upcoming elections in 2 years or in 4 years again for the White House, that the only other thing I could see happening is you know, the investigation into Russia, that something turns up that there really was some kind of collusion that could be considered treason. And that would only turn enough to have it happen. Some of the really, I think, moderate people who consider themselves patriotic more than just anti-government Republicans. But that's kind of a long shot also at this point.
What about something like... the transcript from the dossier, the guy who published the dossier, that British guy, they just had, what is it
he called? He just testified, closed door session, in Congress. No, I mean, that transcript isn't going to swing it. It's going to have to be something, amazing.
Yeah.
What I think it will be
huge.
That swing
is going to have to be huge. It's going to have to be huge.
I think basically the only foreseeable thing is if Mueller comes out with something bananas like the P video. Comes out on the internet so that people can watch it for themselves. Like, I'm literally, it has to be that level. I know you're laughing, but I'm serious. Like, that's what the level it has to be.
I completely agree, John. The catalyst
it
has
to be
that
photo
that strong.
Evidence. I think it has to be visual evidence. Like, we have seen, like, look at the analogy of police shootings. We know we can write news stories about police shootings, and they're scary. And then you have a video come out of a police shooting, and it goes viral, and it becomes a whole story, and everybody's talking about it. The visual impact that visual evidence can have on news cycles is extraordinary. And so I think in order for the American people to understand and for it to really change, there has to be some kind of like visual representation, or there has to be like an audio tape of Trump being like, yes, I would love to talk to Vladimir Putin about screwing Hillary Clinton. Like, it's got to be that intense. Or the Democrats have to win in 2018. That's the other thing that can do it. And I think that's the only thing that we can actually rely on. That is the ball game. 2018 is decisive. We have to win 2018. That's it. That's the whole discussion.
We need a smoking gun or a peeing wiener.
Yes, there needs to be a phallic object involved.
I would love to see that video, man. Oh, gosh. That'd be amazing.
I would love to know that it exists for other people to see. I don't know if I personally want to watch.
Yeah, I'm a little on the fence about that.
Oh, I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see all of it.
I'm sure it's bad.
Blake is the master researcher here at Ameripod. So he goes out and does all that kind of graphic video watching.
It's true. I am the master researcher. He
can keep us posted on stuff. It's really nice.
Calling all of my hacker friends.
Anonymous.
If you guys can come up with that, that'd be great.
You know, speaking just kind of non sequitur, it is amazing that Donald Trump's tax returns haven't leaked. There are so many government officials that have that. Like, Donald Trump should really be very grateful to the IRS that it hasn't leaked.
Yeah,
some people actually do their jobs in the government, you know?
Yeah. Turns out a lot of people
hold themselves to a standard. Crazy.
Yeah.
Shall we segue to...
I was going to say some of those best people are military officials that were sent into Afghanistan.
There we go.
Boom! Segue.
What is it? We have 20,000 Special Forces troops in Afghanistan, I think, alone.
I don't know if it's all... 20,000? I don't know what the numbers are, and I don't know if they're all 20,000 or special forces. That's a big number for special forces.
I believe I read this in the New York Times today, and their numbers were 20,000 special forces units, and they make up only 7% of all the military in that area, but they do, I think they said 70 to 80% of the fighting.
Yeah, the Special Forces troops do a tremendous amount of the fighting. The regular troops are mostly trainers, and we're not even supposed to be in a combat role. Well, prior to Monday, we're not even supposed to be in a combat role in Afghanistan. Anytime we were getting shot at was ostensibly a mistake.
That is correct. Yep.
So why would our special forces be doing the majority of the military action out there?
Because you don't send in, so like regular army units are designed to work in large numbers in like the hundreds, and they're designed to go in and do big things. They're a hammer basically, and they hit nails. Counterterrorism work and counterinsurgency work is a lot more like surgery. You need a scalpel, not a hammer. It needs to be very precise. You're going in, you're trying to not kill any civilians. You're trying to capture somebody, possibly, rather than kill them. So you need to be extremely precise. And the Special Forces units are designed to work in much smaller numbers, like in the dozens or less, even.
Sure.
So they're able to do those types of missions.
Yeah, but I love that analogy too, John, about the surgery.
It's good.
The scalp moves, especially because it's exactly how past presidents have viewed it. Because it's partially going in and doing it, but then it's the second part is nation building, which is right. The second part of helping healing a body after you have surgery is making the body better after, which is what Trump does not want to do anymore.
Such good analogies. Well,
longer nation building. He said it specifically.
So
I guess
Trump,
my question though, before we get into something different, was why aren't we training, or why don't these? Like, does Afghanistan have its own special forces that they can be using instead of ours?
No.
That's my ultimate question.
They might be training them up, but the American military is bananas. I mean, it has capacities that no other military has in the world. And part of that is that we have, through several generations, built up institutional knowledge on how to do things. Our special forces have been working since Vietnam. And therefore, we have a lot of knowledge that other institutions don't have, or other militaries don't have. That's why we do a lot of training. And so
wisdom?
Indeed. And so the American military, like the Afghan military, has no institutional experience. They have no infrastructure in their military which to operate these things. An example of that is everybody's kind of freaked out about China and their Navy, is specifically their aircraft carrier capacity that they're upgrading. One of the things that should temper that freaking out is that they have to learn how to fly airplanes off of aircraft carriers, which turns out is really, really, really hard. And the American Navy spent a lot of time sending a lot of pilots to the bottom of the ocean because we didn't know how to do it properly for a long time. And so that institutional knowledge gets built up over generations, and now we are extremely sophisticated and don't have that problem anymore. So the Afghan military has a significant problem because Afghanistan isn't even really a country. It's a series of tribal regions. And so trying to institutionalize a national army, much less a national special forces, is a generational undertaking.
Mm-hmm. Or multi-generational.
Right? Well, it is, because we keep blowing them up. And so it's
and then there's no recovery from operation.
Yeah, and I want to get at this nation building thing real quick. So Trump outlined four pillars of his strategy. He said, number one, we are going to make our withdrawal based on objectives, not on time. Barack Obama would say we're going to withdraw on X date. He did that for political reasons, not military reasons, because insurgencies are not wars; they're politics with guns. Number two, he said we're going to use, quote, the diplomatic, economic, and military might of the United States in an integrated way. Come back to that in a second. Number three, he said we have to be more aggressive with Pakistan, including leveraging India against them, which is extremely dangerous in nuclear terms. And yeah, four, he said, we need to up troop levels and the rules of engagement to go out and kill bad guys should be eased, which is a good way to create more terrorists. But the thing that's really interesting, so he says we need to use integrated diplomatic, economic, and military means. That is nation building. You literally cannot have diplomatic and economic integrated means with your military without going out and nation building. So his strategy,
because that's not a policy. It's a broad paint of a brush that uses buzzwords that says this is what I'm going to do. Diplomatic and economic could necessarily mean I'm pulling out all communications with people that are in the Afghan government. I'm putting sanctions on the entirety. I'm going to stop trade from coming in. I'm going to besiege the entire country. And that could, in Trump's mind, be diplomatic and economic. That's what I'm saying, but
in counterterrorism doctrine and counterinsurgency doctrine, like you go in and you build a school and you build a sewage treatment plant and you have to talk to the local tribal leader in order to do that. That's diplomacy. Building those things are economics, and then you have to protect them, which is the military component. Like
that's nation building.
Yep. That's exactly, and that's how you fight terrorists. And so that, because terrorism is not. I was actually listening to the fourth generation war manual last night, and it's all about politics, but with guns. Like we are gonna screw ourselves and create a ton of terrorists with this strategy. It is so stupid to go out and try and kill bad guys with counterterrorism. That's not the point. That's not how you do it.
It shouldn't be, from people who have studied anything about international relations, anything about history, about how people get along with each other once wars finish and peace is restored. If you kill somebody's father, he's going to be pissed and come after you.
Yeah.
Like that's human nature, right?
And so are all of his sons and the uncle and the cousins. Like you can't, it's whack-a-mole, and when you kill one, sounds you add five. Yeah. So it's just, I am morally offended at the stupidity of this. It is just bad strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it was him just talking off prompt and how much was given to him directly from, say, the generals that are close to him and from John Kelly and from, because I mean,
well, you tell us. Stuff, but,
I mean, yeah, right.
I heard.
I mean, this is classic hardline Republican ways of fighting terrorism. It's what George Bush wanted to do initially, go in and brush them up. And it was only after 3 or 4 years of really nothing happening besides clearly creating more of a mess than solving that kind of that idea of nation building snuck back into conversations.
And his I would actually like to give George Bush credit for the political courage to do the surge, which actually seemed to like be relatively effective in the short term.
In the short term, it was.
And the humility and good leadership skills to actually realize that he had fucked up and do a review and take control of his presidency, that I think showed really good leadership. And especially in the Trump administration, I am reflecting on both Bushes much more positively, especially in terms of their moral character. I disagree with them a lot on policy, but man, do I miss some moral character.
I think it's safe to say that Trump's political depth is equivalent to the depth and understanding of his followers in regards to humanity.
Yeah. I mean, he obviously has not studied any of the... I mean, one of the most laughable quotes was he said something like, I have studied Afghanistan from every conceivable angle. And it's just like, you were watching Fox and Friends. Like, there's no fucking way that you read any of your briefing papers. And by every the way, your briefing...
angle.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane.
I think I read on Vox that somebody said his speech sounded very McMaster, and that he was reading from a teleprompter for most of it.
Oh, he was reading from it for all of it, I think.
Yeah. So I don't think there's a whole lot of improv in there. It was pretty planned out.
There was a 3-month review process. So there was obviously some process to come up with these things. I think it is interesting, the timing with this, right after Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this was in some ways viewed through a political prism and or a political lens and done for political reasons. Although the speech on Tuesday, like I would do Afghanistan politically to change the subject, and his speech on Tuesday obviously brought the subject back to Charlottesville. So I don't know if that's actually a thing, or maybe the administration wanted to do that, and then Trump just went off the rails, which is totally
wrong. Right. Like I said, man, his political depth, it's about as deep as his followers' understanding of humanity.
Yeah, he's not. He is.
He just keeps like, it's like a double negative, you know, or not even a double negative. That's a bad way of putting it. Just every time he does something, he cancels it out.
Yeah, this myth about him being a political genius is wrong, because I don't think that he like has conscious thought really, but I think that he has this like amazing like homing pigeon instinct for like publicity. I think that he like he uses his Twitter account to iterate over what gets reaction, I think, and is able to like use this dark, deep, terrible hole in his soul to like analyze this data and figure out how to best use it. But I honestly don't think that it is like conscious in any way. I don't think that he's playing chess. I think he's just a very sophisticated homing pigeon.
Yeah, I just look at him like a blowhard, but definitely a blowhard and a yeah, nice Blake, and an attention whore. He craves attention, and that's why he's a homing pigeon now, is because he has honed those skills over 40 years of being in the business world and a very public figure in it. And it's the reason he was successful for all these years. So it's no surprise that he brought that skill set to the White House. What's the old dodge that an old dog can't learn new tricks?
Right.
Yep.
Like, it's going to happen. It's going to continue. Hey, he's not going to change. It's going to continue.
No, and that's why everything is about messaging, and why he gets up there and he's a political, or he's a media pundit instead of like talking about policy. It's just, he's not, he should just resign and go back to what he likes doing, which is throwing rocks.
I mean, I was amazed. I remember talking to some people right after the election. They're like, he's going to last a month. He's going to blast both sides on the media. And then he's just going to quit and start Trump TV. And he's going to make $3 billion. And, like, that's his master plan. And I was like, that makes perfect sense to me. That
finally become a billionaire.
So John Harwood, who is I think he's like the head political editor for CNBC, maybe, or something. He's a very prominent journalist. He tweeted recently that he's hearing from prominent Republicans that Trump is thinking about resigning when Mueller gets close to the family.
Really?
Yeah, and he
also wouldn't surprise me.
Me neither. Although the pardoning power is a strong incentive for Donald Trump
to stay.
So yeah, that because
the investigation will still go on after he resigns.
Right. So it could be that the deal is that he resigns if Pence will pardon him, and then all of the Republican leadership will cover Pence for doing it, something like that.
Hmm.
Because there's no way that Trump will walk away from the presidency still vulnerable to, you know, Russian money laundering charges.
Right.
Or whatever is going on. Although that is what I think is going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some evidence out there that points that that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For
sure.
I think he would make a good news correspondent.
Trump. I think he would make a good resident of Greenland without internet service.
Just out there in a melting igloo.
Yeah, we should just stick him somewhere where he can't hurt the world anymore.
Set him adrift.
Yes, give him there's this guy who tried to create like his own country on an oil platform. You guys heard about guy? Trump should just do that, and then he can go be king of like Trump Stan.
There's like a whole movie or documentary on that, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Actually, they did. It was outside of England, right? And they made themselves like their own, and like what is that called? They seceded or something. Pretty sure there's a documentary on this.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure there was. Crazy. Yeah, no. I think you're right. Like, I'm pretty sure there is. That's a real thing.
I wasn't thinking you were crazy. That's just how my face looks.
Resting crazy face.
Resting your nuts face.
Well, I mean, fuck Nazis, and...
Yeah, we didn't really get to a lot of sprucing in on fuck Nazis, but you should follow our new Twitter handle, at Boo Nazis.
Don't you make it pretty clear where we stand?
Yeah.
You haven't heard other episodes.
Yeah, like ghosts.
Yeah.
We're, like, talking about ghost Nazis, Nazis that are dead. Like,
our Facebook post for episode... 29. Episode 29 was fuck Nazis, right?
Yeah.
Thank you, users, because that got by far the most interaction we've had from any Facebook post that we've had so far. So that really tells us where you stand in terms of both your civility and your political stances. So thank you.
It's okay to come out publicly.
You should say it, because it's literally the easiest thing in the world to hate on Nazis.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. They're
bad. It's driving me nuts how many people are like, there was no right side. Like, both sides are pathetic and a disgrace to America. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, no, like, one side had Nazis on it. That's it. That's the end of the discussion.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
There's different people inside the party on the right, and we're not accusing all people and all Republicans of being Nazis or Nazi sympathizers. What we were saying is that people in Charlottesville that were inciting violence on the right and chanting against black people and Jewish people and women are Nazis, mm-hmm. clearly, and they're self-proclaimed Nazis. Mm-hmm. So don't be tricked by that. Yeah. That's what they are.
Here's what should tell you something about the coalition against Nazis. We teamed up with Joseph fucking Stalin to fight the Nazis.
The commie himself. The commie and all commies.
Seriously, King Commie. We signed up with him to fight the Nazis. That's how fucking bad the Nazis are. Nazis are worse than commies.
Yep. Yep.
On the hierarchy.
It drives me nuts how many of these little videos are surfacing like these huge dudes with, like, America flag t-shirts on.
They're like, you mean the ones that cry and go to jail?
Those people are misinformed and they're taking the easy road out, which is I'm not going to take a stand, say both sides is wrong.
Yeah. But you're kind of taking a third party stance, which is actually just aligning yourself more on the right.
Right.
In my opinion.
I vote.
I was going to say that's a much bigger conversation. We don't have time to get into.
Yeah. Next time. Next time on Boo Nazis 2.
Yeah.
Or Fuck Nazis 2.
Fuck Nazis. Cool. Follow us at Boo Nazis. Twitter wouldn't let us have Fuck Nazis.
Yeah, that's right. Cool. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we will catch you on the 31st episode.
31 flavors of Ameripod. Godspeed, everybody.